And in the background, I'm also going to be recording the East Coast feed of Days of Our Lives. So we've got that. So we're square on square on two fronts.
Oh, good. So we get to do our podcast and we don't miss our stories.
No. Daddy needs his stories.
Isn't there a whole channel you can subscribe to for that?
Oh, I wouldn't surprise you.
Yes, you would.
Yeah, back off, real.
Yes, you would know.
I have a legitimate reason for knowing. A childhood friend of my brother's, a school friend, grew up to be an actor on Veronica Mars and now is an actor on The Young and the Restless. And so we do record SoapNet so that we can fast forward to all of Mike's part. There's a channel. There's a cable channel called SoapNet, and all it plays are soap operas.
That's 24 hours a day.
Were you listening to that part
episodes.
On the Stern show yesterday where they were talking about how they're working into certain soap operas product placement? Like they'll be talking and all of a sudden somebody will say, well, what's that you're eating? And the guys will say, Cheerios. Well, why are you eating Cheerios?
No.
Well, because I read this thing. It said, my doctor said I've got to lower my cholesterol and I've been reading, and they say that Cheerios is a good way to do it. And the woman says, well, you didn't have to buy a box. And he said, well, yeah, I did. And she says, no, you didn't. I already bought it because of the great taste.
No.
This
was on the Howard Stern show yesterday. And what I want to ask to you is, how long before we start seeing that in webcomics?
That will never happen.
I don't know.
Ever
if
webcomics.
Does anybody,
right, Chris?
Does any company want a Mega Man in a diaper to espouse, pet boys? I don't know.
Hey, guys, before we
Alien versus Predator loves Chuck Wagon, and you should too.
Before we start the podcast, though, everyone should mute their iPhones. God, I love this phone. It's a really good phone.
I set mine to vibrate.
As I'm reaching for my iPhone, I'm like, oh, okay, that's a joke.
My dogs are shipped up here now. The dogs have moved to Seattle, and I wanted to find a dog park for them, and there was an app for that.
Really? Oh, nice.
iPhone 4. Wonderful product.
Because I've been having trouble connecting. Like, I lose signal everywhere. Like,
it's a wonderful product.
Cut. Receipt check. Everybody clap.
Well, I gotta tell you guys a quick story about daytime soaps, actually, because when I went to college, one of the guys that I roomed with, because college is sort of by lottery, you get stuck with some people your freshman, sophomore year kind of thing, and then later on in years you can sort of pick who you live with. One guy that I got freshman year actually turned out to be a wonderful guy. Was from the Philippines, but he essentially was from the Filipino mob, his family, and so. He had been – I'm not kidding when I say he had a bodyguard when he went to certain places, and he had been trained in like Krav Maga and Taekwondo and like four different types of martial arts, and super tough guy and drank a lot and all sorts of stuff. But every day when he would come home from class, boop, General Hospital on, sitting there watching General Hospital. And it was such a wonderful character study to be like this huge guy, like, oh, I love me my stories.
Right. I got to unwind somehow. These pressures.
I'm taking over a crime family, but God, I love this story of Mark and Elise. I hope they work it out, these crazy kids.
Turns out he wasn't dead.
It's his twin. He's yelling at the screen.
I hope that doesn't happen with any of my enemies. It's a good thing people really can't come back.
Hey, this is pretend, right?
Anyway, so comics, right?
Let's do that for a while.
Oh, yeah. I guess we should start this officially.
By the way, because I literally hadn't pulled out my podcasting headphones in like 6 or 7 months, I looked up when the last time the four of us – it was like spring of this year that we did one last, all four of us.
Wow.
Well, I know that we had decided to take a break because we felt like we had been answering the same like 10 questions over and over.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we stop. And the minute we stop, people say, well, we don't care about the questions. We just want to hear you guys be friends. Like, we don't care if you talk about comics even at all.
We probably will.
I'm sure that we will. That's just by nature, right?
Cut to an hour-long discussion about the gold standard. We're just like, blah.
But so I think that When did the rumblings of this starting up again kind of start?
Well, was it Brad, I think, that...
Was it when you and I were sitting at New York Comic Con, Scott? Because I remember you saying a couple times, man, I really want to do that podcast again. And I'm like, anytime. You know, we just have to... The other part was finding a time where we could make all of our schedules, you know, mesh up.
Yeah.
But I think it was New York Comic Con when we were sitting at the table there where we were saying, you know, really, we there's nothing stopping us other than the logistics.
Yeah, and then we just kind of – I assumed that I was the only person that wanted to start up again. And then Brad is like, no, I'd love to. So it's exciting. Exciting to be back.
It is. And you know what's cool? You guys probably get this too. Like the last four shows that I've done, I don't think I've been with you guys. I was like Long Beach and New England Web Comics Weekend and stuff. But every show I do now, people are like, oh, man, when are you bringing that podcast back? And almost to a T, everyone says, like, I draw to it. Oh, I turn it on when I'm drawing. And it's like, oh, that's awesome. I love that set because I have those shows for me, you know. So that meant a lot to me.
I had an idea as far as I mean, not that we're hurting for content if we can sit here and talk about soap operas for an hour, but what if we were to mine our like Dave? I know you get a form spring.
Oh God.
You know what
I mean? Oh man!
But I'm saying,
I still have a form spring.
Well, open it up to the four of us, and not just be like, Dave, when you draw Arthur, you know what type of pen? Like, all right, that's fine. But I mean, like,
oh, you mean take a question that would work for all four of us, and
right, exactly.
Huh. Well, I got a question the other day, actually. That you know how a lot of times in form spring, you're like, well, same old question. I'm not going to answer that one. Same old question.
Right.
I got one the other day that like kind of fit the mood that I was in, which was, how do you keep it fresh? How do you change it up?
How do you keep it fresh on the mic?
The question was like for when you can sense that you're getting stale or sense that things are. And I was like, man, because remember Scott when you were at like the 10-year point, we had a lot of discussions about you were feeling antsy about it, right? I mean, you were like.
I panicked.
I got to change things up. Well, for me, that totally has been happening in the last 6 months. And I was like, oh, I got to do new things. I've got to change things up. And so for me, that meant with one direction, I'm going towards the Cintiq and drawing electronically. And in the other direction, I'm leaving pens behind and I'm going with a brush and a dip well in the other direction. And then starting the documentary and other stuff. It's just like there is that sense every couple of years you get that sense of, boo, got to do something new. Oh, Lord, got to change it up.
But you're starting from a like an infrastructure standpoint where you're like, I always do the same with these pens. I'm going to change up what I'm using.
Well, because in answer to the form spring question, I had said like, well, sometimes it's a matter of changing your environment. Like, where do I write? Where do I draw? Where do I get my ideas, right? So that's one way to do it. And another way is character-based or thematically based. Like, I need new storylines, new characters, new ideas. And then the third one is, yeah, like you said, sort of organizational. Like, how do I do what I do? And that sort of thing. So I think it's probably time for me to do a new character too. But I realize that in 10 years, I had not changed the materials that I work with. And that in itself has been wakes me up to the process, you know?
Something really weird happened to me. All of a sudden, one day, I guess it was 2 or 3 months ago, I just decided I can't use this Cintiq. I want my tablet again. And I pulled out the Intuos.
Really? Oh, really? Wow.
So my setup right now is when we bought my computer in, I don't know, 2006. And we had just gotten a big check from Image, I think. It was a Cruel check. And Angie's like, let's get you a good computer. Let's get you a Mac. It was when I first bought a Mac. And we went to the Mac store, and she's like, why get that? Why get an iMac? Why not get this tower? And then she's like, that's a big monitor. That would be really great for your artwork. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's expensive. And she's like, let's do it. It's a deduction. Our accountant wants us to do a deduction. And so I had to leave. She had to write the check. It was really expensive, and it was freaking me out. But so I have this 30-inch monitor, and I never use it to draw.
Can I tell you though, Scott? I now have an image of you, like, three stores down in front of the coffee bean, like, just slurping on a latte going, oh.
David, don't, so big. Don't laugh. She kept saying, the accountant wants us to spend some money so we have more deductions. And I had to leave the Apple store in the mall and go down to the Starbucks, and I did order a latte and sit there while she wrote a check for, like, $6,000.
I know that feeling, though, where you're like, oh, just slurping down the latte. Oh, God, oh, God.
And she's like, look, we'll lose the money. And I'm like, we're losing the money now. We're buying computers. And she's like, but no, you have that much money in computers. Otherwise, it'll be taken out as taxes. She's like, just don't worry about the math. Leave the math to me. But I had this 30-inch monitor, this beautiful high-res monitor, and I draw on the Cintiq. I never use that monitor for art. And I finally got tired, and I'm just like, no, I want to look at my big monitor. And I just started drawing using the Wintuos. And the Cintiq is sitting here. And I'm sure I'll go back to it. But as artists, aren't we all weird in the sense? It's like, no, now I need to have a feather like, in my ear.
I think that
when
the
I
good
draw.
Writing was inside the tablet, not the Cintiq.
Yeah. No, but you're right. But Scotty, we all have that tiny part of us that's like, need the green M&Ms. That's all I need. I can't write without the green. You know, like as much as we make fun of like the Ozzy Osbournes, it's like there's a part of us that's like, if I don't have the sunlight just right, I can't draw. Or if this screen is seeing the sunlight filter, I can't draw. You know, there's a part of it. It's true.
Well, I've had the same thing since moving into the new studio. That I mean, it's I've saved a certain amount of time in terms of what I have to spend taking kids to and from school. I don't have to drive all the way back to the house to start working. What now? What's so funny about that? You're
no
laughing
one's,
at me.
No one's laughing. Nobody's hearing stuff.
Good job, Grandpa.
No,
wait, hold on. Who started my tractor out back? Hold on. Who's on the tractor? Get off the tractor back.
I heard Chris start to laugh at me. I'm on to you, Chris.
I didn't do anything.
Oh, shit.
Sit down.
Wow.
Fall down.
What was my point? Oh, well.
Exactly.
I swear to God, I heard somebody laughing inside my headphones. Anyhow, it's the same. It's much the same day that I had during the summer, but just the change of environment and being surrounded by, you know, everything that I really like, I'm really creatively charged up. And it's something like that that is I'm finding time to start new projects that I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's the same number of hours, but I'm so much more focused and so much more creatively charged that I'm getting a lot more done.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about altering your environment a little bit. I mean, companies do that, right? Companies will bring people in specifically. I'm not talking about the really hippie companies that'll bring in someone to do feng shui or something, but actually, I used to know a person who worked for a company that their job was creating environments that were more conducive to creating. Like they'd come in and go, look, the reason why no one's working productively here is because your space is all wrong.
Too many windows.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was anything from as simple as this fluorescent lighting is going to just kill everybody. We need to put in some natural lighting. And sometimes that was enough.
Can I tell you though, as much like I don't truck with the feng shui kind of stuff, but Mattel had a consultant come in and put in a bunch of skylights and then change the carpeting and do something with like they took out a center wall, right? And I swear to God, that place was so much more comfortable to work in for like the next year, year and a half after
they do it. Mm-hmm. They do it with kids too. They would do it with kids for school so they would learn better.
Yeah, that makes sense. There are definitely environments, like, for whatever reason, Glow and I have found a coffee shop in L.A., and there's no other place that works like this, that has this one specific little nook in a coffee shop that we can totally crank out work in, both of us. And it's so random that this exists that, I don't know, but it's really specific. Like, if even the wrong crowd is in that coffee shop, it's like, nope, can't work, can't do it, nope, gotta go, I'm gonna go walk for a while, come back, all right, they're good, all right, now I can work again. But
work around a bunch of toughs.
What was funny is, like, you guys that work digitally might not have this, but, like, maybe Brad can relate, is, like, sometimes I'll go to a coffee shop and I'll bust out my little, you guys have seen it, that little metal case of cartooning supplies and stuff.
Right.
And start working. And sometimes I feel like just the biggest ninny and little sissy boy. Like, I look in here, and it's like, you know, it's like a traveling Australian rugby team sits down next to me, and I'm like, God damn it, all right.
Excuse me, sir, but if you could please stop discussing your sports so loudly.
Gentlemen, could I trouble you in the midst of your straight black coffee? I have a quick question. Does the duck look cuter when he's sitting on his butt or when he's rolling on his back? Which way does the duck look cuter?
Can I'm afraid if you gentlemen don't stop speaking so loudly, I won't be able to finish my art.
Sir, you strike an imposing figure. If I could get you to stand in a certain...
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I need some life art real quick to model from. Could you strike a pose as though someone has thrown a Star Wars figure at you, but you're trying to duck? Could you do that for me real quick?
Could you arch your back a little bit more? Not for the drawing.
Yeah,
just
it's so funny. It's so funny that you went there, because in my head, I had all of a sudden this nerd was completely sexist, and he goes, "Sweetheart, if you could hold this coffee cup, you know, the way women do, I need to get a shot of a housewife."
I like that the nerd has the sexist thing. Sugar Plum Fairy, listen, could I just have you hold this for a second?
Sweetums.
Look at here, dainty cup. Here's what I need for you.
Dainty cup.
No, I can't work outside. I would never work outside.
No, I'm with you, Chris. I've got to be in my zone. I can't do things outside like that. I got
to
be in my little zone. No,
I do sometimes.
But like, don't you
nice and sequestered and?
But what about the opposite problem, where it's one thing to be worried that you're not going to be able to work because of the people around you or whatever the environment. But what about when people come up to you and it's like, "What are you doing?"
No, I know.
Wow. Good for you. You know, like, I can't do that. I can't work with that.
I remember. That's why I can't get anything done when I'm on, like, traveling. I can do a little bit of writing, but I can't get actually work done, like, if I'm at an airport or something, because of exactly that.
Probably not at an airport, but if I have a desk or a chair in front, a table in front of me, I can do it. But here's the thing that I've never had anyone come up and do the, "Oh, are you a cartoonist?" But like when the iPad first came out, before everyone and their dog had one, you were kind of the douche that pulled his iPad out.
Right.
And, you know, so like it's like you're at the coffee shop and everyone's got their laptop and there's no way to take out your iPad without it looking like you're purposely taking out your iPad so everyone can go, "Is that the new iPad? Can I see it?"
Yeah.
And so I know a ton of people do this and just set up and work, but not many people pull out a tablet and start drawing. And it just feels like every time I do it, like I'm like, "Hey, look, everybody, I'm an artist. Check it out. I'm making things. I'm making art. What's this? What's this amazing device? I know you're curious. Well, let me tell you."
But it's also Sky. Like you're not sitting anymore. You're standing, and like the tablet is tilted in your arm, like it's a palette, you know. And you're like, "Yes, yes, I'm drawing here, folks."
Stand aside, artist at work.
Yeah, exactly. You've got a
sometimes,
little French braille.
Sometimes what I like to do is I like to. My dad has this old oak Mayline drafting table. It's giant. I like to take it apart, put it in my truck, take it down to the local comic book shop, set it up.
Reassemble it.
Reassemble the thing in plain view of just everyone. Just I usually like just very subtly kick over the new releases.
even better, you're like, "It's missing a leg." So what I do is I stack all the Bone graphic novels up so that they make the fourth leg of the table.
And
I know,
and
I
then,
stack up all of my books so that everyone.
Hey, can you yahoos let me finish my sentence? And then after I kick over the new titles, because they scattered, I push my Mayline drafting table across the floor so it goes against the wall and kind of tuck it into the corner, because I'm an introvert. I don't like people watching me. I don't know if you are familiar with me, but I'm very introverted. And then I do a flourish of my arms, you know, like, like Victor Borga. And then I just start drawing. Nothing.
You don't walk because I don't have my computer with me. You don't walk around making the director hands like you're looking through a camera first.
You
stalk around the entire premises going, "No, this won't work. Yes, over here.
And then I say, "Flibbity flibbity do. I'm about to draw some comic strips."
Do you ever loudly say, "Oh, this muse of mine"?
"Time to tempt sweet lady muse to come."
Oh, and got me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been known to happen.
It occurs.
Not often, because it is really a pain to disassemble all that.
But it's worth it for the process. It's worth it.
It's super worth it for the process.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do that joke about Lady Gaga, which was incredible, a classic, a standard.
Poker face.
There, we needed that button.
You're welcome. So, like, what's happened in webcomics? This is an interesting thought. It's been since spring of last year since we talked, all four together.
Mm-hmm.
Publicly.
It's true.
I guess we've talked at conventions. But, like, what's happened in webcomics since we've all been in the podcast together? Has a lot changed? Has very little changed?
You know what's funny? As an image, this is what occurs to me, is though we're like, so what's changed? In the meantime, behind all four of us, the four horsemen of the apocalypse are raining down fire and brimstone. We're like, well, not much. Not a lot's changed. Everything's pretty much the same.
Certain instabilities in the marketplace. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I this is the tough thing for me, is I don't know whether or not if we perceive change, if it is because our finger is off the pulse. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's as same as it ever was, but I feel like I've become more insular, and maybe it's a question of being more nose to the grindstone.
That's definitely the case.
Yeah.
I think we all have been more nose to the grindstone.
Definitely. Well, that would explain why we haven't done this show, partly. I mean, we have been busy.
That would explain why I haven't seen you guys in a while.
I really got to remember to eat. This is a problem. This is not good. No, but you're right. The only thing that I think that pops to mind that may potentially, and I have not, this is me being honest, I have not done any research on it, but PayPal's little micropayment system could, not right away, but in a year or two, if they sort out the problems with it, that could be interesting in what we're able to offer for 20 cents, 25 cents, that sort of thing.
Hmm. So is like, I just pictured PayPal announcing micropayments, and then every web cartoonist could hear McCloud going, yes!
literally somewhere McCloud stands up from his desk, drops his pants, and then hands are just in the air. Yeah!
I knew it. That was worth a nickel.
I was right.
Vindication.
But it's pointless now. Like, it's of course they have micropayments now because they're no longer needed.
Guys, we figured it out. Here they are.
Guys, we figured out a way to make your steam-powered car. Wait, guys?
Yeah. Gentlemen, I've invented a valve that will keep your steam-powered vehicle from burping up hot water onto your lady's parapet.
Corset, yeah.
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you, PayPal.
Seriously, you don't use this anymore? No. Well, very well. I'll get back in my time machine and take this back to my own year.
How is it implemented? I mean, because I know that PayPal takes a big bite for a small transaction.
It says 5% plus 5 cents per transaction. So that's actually not that good.
No, it's horrible. That ends up being like 40% depending on what you're donating. I was going to say,
that could be really painful depending on.
Like, yeah. They already had that. You know, if you consider a micropayment a dollar, I'm not going to want to. Why would I want to donate 3 cents to a website if I got to pay PayPal 6 cents?
Look, this is going to be great for anyone who wants to sell a webcomic to someone in 1985. Or, I'm sorry, 1998. I have my dates.
No, in 1985, they would have paid millions of dollars.
Do not listen. You joke all you want, but don't underestimate the CompuServe market for the potential for micropayments. I mean,
yeah, guys, I know how to post comics to Prodigy now.
Prodigy,
this is gonna be great. No, but it's really interesting. I feel like since last we talked, the term webcomic has become more irrelevant than ever.
I agree with that.
So.
What's that?
How so?
Well, because, like, I think Comixology and Marvel and DC and Image and Dark Horse and all of the comic book companies moving to the iPad have just, like, the idea of a comic being digital as a trivial thing is so overplayed now.
Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, like, I think that the final nail in the coffin of this was that DC finally released a, unfortunately, I think it's Adobe Flash version, but you can now just go to their website and buy their comics. So you can go on your iPad and buy them, but you can also buy them on your desktop, and then it'll sync with your iPad.
And like, it's just a PDF at that point, or what?
No, it just reads it. You just read it on your
desktop. I see.
So you buy a digital copy of Blackest Night, and you can read it on your desktop, and then you go on your iPad and log into the same cloud and read that. You could read that same comic on your iPad, and then you're on the bus, and you log into the same cloud, and all your comics are on your iPhone. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it seems that right now seems a little trivial, but there are kids being born right now that are in 7 or 8. I mean, Brad, Alex, right?
Right.
Alex will not remember a time when comics weren't something you read on a little device.
For the most part, Alex is a little bit of a unique situation because he's got his own pull list at the comic shop. So he's going to have a memory of printed comics, but go ahead.
Can I interrupt for a second, Brad? What I heard is Alex is going to have a unique situation because his dad is a massive nerd. So he's going to have a slightly different memory of comics than other people.
Oh, yeah, I definitely am warped.
Or the idea that, like, I don't think it's going to change nearly as much as anybody thinks because I've got my comic book collection and I'm going to give that to my son. And, of course, he'll give that to his son
and so on.
So there will always be comic books.
But, yeah, he's definitely going to have more of a sense of a digital.
Chris,
what?
I thought you were going, I'm going to give my comics to my son and then he'll give them to his son and then his son will give them to my reanimated body and I'll get them back. Because by then they'll have found a way to unfreeze my head,
right,
and cure my prostate cancer.
See you guys in the year 4000
with a boner.
and your entire run of Secret Wars. So there you go.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Twilight Zone episode twist of that is you wake up and you're like, finally. Now, it's the year 4000, and I have my comics, and they're worth millions now, probably. No, I'm sorry. A meteorite passed by the Earth, and it turned everything into comics. Comics have no inert value anymore. And then it just goes like, now shut up and eat your salad. It's just eating, like, Deadpool comics.
You know what's most sad about this future life we've created for Brad is that he's reanimating his life. He's starting all over again just to read comics. I mean, like, it's not like the value of his life itself is not high enough. He's like, no, it's not that I want to live. I just want to read more comics.
How about this? I'm finally the year 4000 with my comics. This is the best. All right, let's see. Secret Wars. Here we go. The Beyonder. Okay. These are stupid.
This is sophomoric storytelling. And what's with the jury girl?
And then it's just a crane shot of him going, there was time now! Time! Anyway. Hey, Brad, I wanted to ask you one question, though, because this actually, I had like three separate conversations at Webcomics Weekend about this very same thing. And then I saw the pictures that you posted of your studio, right?
Uh-huh.
And you have on one of the walls of your studio every badge from every show or nearly.
Oh, I'm so jealous of that.
I've wanted to do that for the longest time. In the house, I had these three really big framed sets of comic strips that I did in college. And I've been saving all my badges and notching them into the frames. And it was getting to be too much. So when I moved over here, I had a space that was perfect for it. So I bought like this putty. That's especially designed, you know, to put stuff up on walls. You don't have to drive any nails and stuff like that. And I just spent about an hour one day putting all the badges up in this little space, and it really looks cool.
It really does look cool. I was envious that I have over the years thrown them all out. But
here's my history with every single badge that I've ever gotten. Okay, oh fuck. Is it time to pack for the New York Comic Con again? All right, let me get my suitcase. What's still in here? Oh, that's where that shirt's been for the last 6 months. Oh, here's where those socks have been for the last 6 months. I never unpacked them. Here's my... Ow! fucking bad. Toss. Because, you know what I mean? Like, you reach into your, you're pulling all the shit out of your suitcase, like Sharpies, every comic that someone gave me that I'm like, I will read this on the plane. No, I won't. And then you reach in and you get stuck and you're like, what the fuck? Oh, I hated this convention. Toss.
You toss it with all the business cards that you promised you'd hold on to. Mm-hmm. If you're like me.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's like ogres.
I'm going to take these home and scan these.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that, being a little bit of a pack rat, I've just always gotten into the habit of holding on to them, and they went into a big pile, and yeah, it is kind of cool.
Yeah, but so here's the flip side conversation of it, Brad, is that I looked at that photo, I was like, oh man, that's neat. Brad's been to a lot of conventions, and they are all up on his wall. But the conversation before I saw that you had done that at New England Web Comics Weekend was, I was like, someone said, don't you wish you could do that? And then a part of me was like, would that actually make me depressed that I had been to all those shows?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to be a jerk. I was sincere in that thought. I was like, that would look so cool. And then I was like, oh, that might make me sad, actually. I don't know.
Yes and no.
Brad, does it make you sad?
yes and no. Well, here's the deal. If I were to go back and rewrite a chapter of how to make webcomics, it would be the chapter that I wrote on attending comic conventions, because I think I was so enthusiastic about it that I forgot to say you can't do a convention until you're really ready to do a convention. And I've been doing a lot
to say, don't go to conventions.
But you know what? That's actually true. And I've been doing a lot of writing about this on webcomics.com, where I'm saying, you know, if I could take about half of those badges off the wall and actually go back and use that time to either do something meaningful for my comic or just do whatever, I think I would do that, because I started doing shows way too early and I wasted a lot of time and a lot of money. And it wasn't until really a few years ago that I was really justifying my time spent at comic conventions, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we've had this conversation recently where, you know, you have this threshold and it gets to be a bit cynical, but you're at a convention and you're like, you're looking at the money you've made so far and you're like, all right, this does not pick up to a certain amount by 4 o'clock today, I could have made more money officially staying home and working on a new project.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so sad to look at things in such a mercenary way, but
can I tell you though, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I remember a long time ago we had this conversation and I said something to that effect, that I don't go to a show unless I make a profit on it. And I remember you guys were like, you are a beast. You are a horrible human being. But that's your primary concern. I walked away from the conversation going like, am I a terrible human being? Is this a wrong way to make this decision?
No, but we weren't there yet, and we wanted to make you feel that way.
Right. We had to catch up, Dave, to your old man heart.
you had not leveled up on your curmudgeonliness.
Right.
Dave, not only have we caught up to you, but I've gone past it, because – I will be at a convention where I am clearly making a profit, and I'll be like, wow, you know what? I think I cleared, you know, X amount of dollars. That's an amazing profit. But I could have probably made that at home doing X, Y, or Z and not had to travel, be away from my family, put off work. You know what I mean? Like,
I thought it was going to be, but I am really tired, and I just want to go home, so I'm not going to do this anymore.
Well, and then there's the impact that it takes the week or the 2 weeks before the show, and then the week after the show, and you have to work so hard to be able to be gone that weekend, and so hard to catch up after you come back. I really think that I've come 180 degrees on comic conventions in terms of I'm not going to, you know, and I think we talked a little bit about this last podcast.
Yeah, this goes
I'm not
back
gonna
to what
go
we talked about
unless
last week.
It's a guaranteed success. Otherwise, you know, I can spend that time a lot better.
Well, like,
and try to explain that to somebody who's just a year or two into their webcomic and they think that they're doing a good job of promoting their webcomic by going to a comic convention. And what I've been saying on webcomics.com is, no, you could do the same amount of promotion, but even more better, more efficient with a simple Project Wonderful campaign, you know, because you're handing out flyers, but you know that a very small amount of those people are going to use those flyers for what it's worth.
Yeah, you know, it just made me sad. I think, like, guys, let's listen back to like the second or third Webcomics Weekly, and it's the four of us going, well, print out the flyers. The flyers are a great idea. Go to every convention. It's a no fail. It's an incredible opportunity, and it's the best time to be a web cartoonist.
Oh, and think about this, Chris. Think about all those curmudgeons that we saw. And I don't mean that in a derisive way, because I consider myself one now. But like, take a look at some of those guys that were working for Marvel and DC, and they were showing up for the convention, and they were bitter and angry, and they couldn't stand the time that they were spending there. And you know, you and I were looking at these guys saying, "Man, they're missing out on all the fun. They just got the wrong attitude."
Right.
And now we're turning into those guys.
Well, yeah. I actually feel for those guys, because most of the people that work at Marvel and DC and stuff, they are not bringing product to sell. It's not like they're selling books. Their books were already sold by the big companies. They're just there to sign comics. They literally are doing the worst part of the convention nonstop. And like when we were at New York Comic Con, remember when Simonson walked past us and said, "Someone stole my portfolio"?
Yeah.
And we're like, "No, Walter. Tell me no." And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm pissed, but there was no art in it. So I've lost one of my favorite portfolios and a scarf.
They've got everything but, to lose.
Yeah, but like they really do have nothing but everything to lose. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, 'cause we're running businesses. But the thing is, I don't know, Dave, if you heard the last podcast we recorded where we talked about scarcity.
I did. I heard that one.
But the thing about scarcity is like, it's not that we're cynical. It's just it just comes with experience, right? Like, as a man pushing 40, when I'm that hangs out with 20-year-olds all the time, and you hear the passion that they state their convictions. You mm-hmm. know, like, well, we were discussing at dinner last night. We were discussing last names and people that like. Well, I know a girl, and her last name was True Love, and she married a person and took his crappy name, and I would keep the name True Love. It's a cool name. And Erica was super passionate about this. She's like, "I just think it's ridiculous that she wouldn't just hyphenate the name or something." And I just went, "Oh, Erica, I can't wait for you to be like 38. And it's not that you won't believe this less, but you just won't give a shit as much about it. Like, because you will learn at a certain point, not because you got cynical, but after time, after 8 or 9 incidents where the intensity of the passion you have for your convictions makes no fucking difference at all. It doesn't change your conviction, but maybe the intensity of it changes. And it's impossible for you to go to as many cons as we've gone to and not accidentally learn stuff.
Right.
So when, you know, by the time you've been to your 8th con, you've met every category of fan and category of exhibitor you're going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impossible for you to have even a partially functioning human brain and not piece stuff together. It's only until you vocalize what you've pieced together that you sound so mercenary and curmudgeon-y.
Yeah.
But if you've been to 6 conventions in over the course of 3 years, all right, it's enough. But if you've gone to 6 conventions a year over the course of 3 years, when a guy comes up to you that says, "Well, how'd you do this week or this weekend?" "Well, we cleared $15,000. You know they're full of shit.
Right.
You know, and you sit there and you're like, "Oh, yeah, wow, that's amazing. No, we didn't do that good, but good on you." And you're like, "Look, I know how much stock you brought. Unless you're charging $1,000 a book."
Well, of course, you realize it's very incumbent upon us to make $15,000 at this convention, because I do need to get a new wheelbarrow to carry around my 12-inch penis.
And then he gestures to the wheelbarrow he brought, and the thing busted on it. It's terrible. And you're like, "Oh yeah, you got to replace that."
It's like, Chris, it's like all the load bearing lug nuts on the wheel are just broken. You're like, "Oh yeah,
bent off."
Yeah, it's like, "No, you actually do need a new wheelbarrow." All right.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny now, but like the first time you show up at a convention and there's no table waiting for you, and you're like, "I have to buy a table?" And you're like, "This is ridiculous." And you're telling everyone you've met, "Can you believe we have to buy tables?" And then it's your 12th convention and you're at the airport and you're texting your friend and like, oh shit, we forgot. We're gonna have to buy a table when we get there. So when you get there, head over to the exhibition booth and I'll pay for the chair if you pay for the table. Let's go to Home Depot. And then you around the con, you hear people going, couldn't you, or someone comes and goes, couldn't you believe we had to buy tables? And you're just like, yeah, you have to buy a table, sweetie. Sorry. And they're like, wow, you've really lost your edge, your fire. But that's very different from what we were getting, which was from not comic book people, but syndicated people saying, well, if that's what it takes to make a living, if you have to go hustle like that to make a living when you can't just make your art, then what's the point? You're not a cartoonist at that point. You're a huckster, you know. That's what we were getting. And I don't think we've gotten to that point yet.
No.
Nor have we gotten to a point of completely misunderstanding what's coming up behind us. I was listening on NPR to an interview with Trudeau because he's hit 40 years of Doonesbury, and I'm just fascinated by the man. I think he's super accomplished. And when I hear like, oh, Kathy's retiring, look at all she's done for women, and I'm like, all right, let's look. Chocolate and shoes and bathing suits. She's done jack shit. Okay, well, awesome. But Doonesbury, I think, has actually – it's been an amazing career of his. And, like, I didn't realize this, but he took 2 years off from the strip to go experience the theater. Really? Did you know that?
No. Well, I knew he had taken that 18-month – yeah, that must be the same thing.
He took, like, a year and a half off, whereas other cartoonists quit. He just said, Doonesbury is going into reruns for, like, 19 months. Because he wanted to pursue his other passion, which was the theater, and he went and put on a production or something.
There was a Doonesbury theatrical play, wasn't there?
I don't know.
Maybe
that seems to resonate with me.
You could safely say yes. I mean, I'm sure there's been.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But
wasn't there a musical of La Cucaracha? Yes.
Yes.
By now, yes.
Too much Coffee Man have an opera? Yes.
I have to talk to you. I have to admit that. I finally, after listening to the interview, I think I finally have let go of this. God, when will they understand? But the NPR person asked him about webcomics, and he says, well, there's one or two webcomics that make a living, but they only make their living because they sell merchandise associated with the comic. And you know, it dawned on me that I am no longer going to be upset with people who say that, because we always get mad at people that are like, well, you're nothing but t-shirt salesmen, because we aren't. And we get angry that the work we put into our strip was just dismissed. And to hear Trudeau say that, there are a couple webcomics that make a living, but they have to do it by really selling merchandise of their stuff. And the truth is that there is a whole generation of cartoonists, some that are Doonesbury level and some that just made a living, that a good portion of their revenue stream was because the work itself was sold to a newspaper. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's amazing. I wish that I could sell the strip itself to somebody and they would buy it. It's just no one's buying it right now, so I'll find an alternative. But if somebody was buying it, I would sell it. But I don't think there's anything wrong with a group of people that for the last 40 years, that's how they've made their living, and they can't make their living that way anymore, and they don't want to start over. I don't know why I want to be mad at someone for that anymore.
Yeah, no, I the older I get, the more I see, like, the ones that are near the end of their careers, I see why they're just like, I'll ride it out till it's done, and then I'm done, you know?
Yeah, she asked him, actually, you know, a lot of your colleagues have retired. Do you see yourself retiring? And he said, I finally don't have to worry about that anymore. I finally don't have to worry about when I'll retire, because the newspapers are going to go out of business before I can have to make that decision. So I'll be the last guy here to turn out the lights.
Oh,
that's probably pretty accurate.
That's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you guys a story. This is great. You're gonna love this. Because your thing about Gary Trudeau totally reminded me of this. So a couple months back, I gave this talk at Ohio State, right, about web comics and comics, and there's mostly syndicated guys.
Jealous that you got to go to that.
Well, let me tell you the story. You're gonna love this moment. So I'm giving the talk about And I got, according to Fred, the guy I was traveling with, he said I got a little heated because I started cussing. And so I'm up on stage and I said, I gave the talk that said, it is bullshit that artists don't think that they have to watch their business. It is bullshit that you think that that this is the natural state of things. Artists have always had to hustle. Artists have always had to do PR and marketing. Artists have always had to watch their books. And then at the exact moment that I said, if you don't watch your books, someone will watch them for you and they will steal your money and you will be ripped off. And that is what has happened for the last 50 years in syndication. You have got to watch your own books. You have got to watch your own money or someone will steal from you. And right as I said that, I looked right at Lynn Johnston and I was like, oh God, what am I doing?
Oh, no.
Oh God, avert your gaze. Stop looking at her. Oh God. And literally, I was like, you guys have done enough public speaking where you know this can happen. Like, I literally got flustered after that. I went,
right. And you're caught in the moment. You're off your game. You start stuttering, and you're finding it incredibly hard to get back into your rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was like, I was super forceful. And I was like, you have got, if you don't watch your money, someone will watch it for you and they will steal from you. And, so, and then, like, right then, boom, Lynn Johnston. Oh, God.
isn't that right, sweetie cakes?
Someone will steal it from you. You know, business peep,
not just a man necessarily. Other man.
I meant agent, managers,
Not husbands.
Not husbands.
Sometimes
anybody
husbands.
Really, but a husband. Lynn, are you available? Because you know.
I meant business people, like not handlers, not someone you would know. I mean, obviously you know your business people, but not personally. Well, you know them personally.
And then
you just turn to her and you go, why did you trust them?
No, it's not okay. I'm getting off track. I'm sorry. Anyway, look, for better or for worse, we.
Hey, but you know, I want to bring this back to Doonesbury just for a minute, and that is, you know, Doonesbury got so popular that he could say, "Hey, I'm taking 19 months off, and you're going to be here when I get back, and that's just the way it's going to be." How interesting that for us, it's interesting to me that Dave, you're spending a lot of time now wondering whether you should take a week off for Christmas. You know what I mean? And my wife is like, Dave is twittering about whether he's going to take a week off at Christmas, and it's like it's a no-brainer. It's so obvious that you could take a week off, especially that week of all weeks, and you're. Readership is not going to fade away to nothing by the time you come back. But we've gotten so entrenched into this daily, it's got to be there every day, it's got to be there every day, that even the idea of taking off for Christmas week when readership is going to fall to nothing anyway is still really hard for us to come to grips with.
Yeah, no, I very much recognize that was a block for me, that I couldn't just be like, all right, here we go, taking a week off, that I had to like, I almost had to ask for permission, you know? Yeah.
Well,
and on some level, that's okay, I guess, because like we shouldn't get complacent in the they'll always be there for us, you know. No matter what I put up or when, they'll be there for us. So on that level, it's good that we collectively feel that fear. But you're right, Brad. It becomes this this all-consuming engine of producing content, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you're afraid it's going to stop. I remember when I would have my panic attacks because my site had gone down. And I would say to Angie, you don't understand, nothing exists. None of the revenue streams I've set up matter once the site's down because that's how they know about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that I have a comic book. It doesn't matter that I have advertisers. It doesn't matter that I have merchandise because without the website there, no one knows.
Right.
So I've got to get it back up. But I think this goes back to our discussion on scarcity a bit. And it's not a matter of saying something like, well, you know, I've been at it for a long time and I want my weekends back. But I think it's safe to reexamine what we've done in the pursuit of this. And especially now that the winds are changing and everyone's kind of online. And I think it's okay now to say, let's be concerned more with quality than quantity, because the quantity is coming, right? Like, we really did have, and I've had people say this to me a bunch, and I used to get mad about it, but they're right. So it's dumb for me to be mad about it anymore. But I have, especially at webcomics.com, I have a lot of guys starting out now that say, please don't talk to me about marketing your strip because you've never done it. You've never had to do it. And they're right. I did not have to market PvP in 1998. It just had to exist. There was there was hardly any competition.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
There was no such thing as a webcomic. I mean, it actually was a novelty.
Right. But
the reason why PvP exists at all is because I was doing comic strips about a video game we were playing, specifically about the developers, and posting it to the forums of a website about that video game. And it started to build itself into a webcomic inside those forums. So the thread when I'd post a new one became my website. And that's when I was like, maybe I'll do a GeoCities site. Maybe I'll just make my own site for it. And, you know, where that was a novel idea. So, yeah, that was new. People were not doing that yet. And then it was Big Panda. So the novelty of it was our marketing. And I don't know. I think we're reaching a point where those of us that have been doing this since 1998, this is our, well, why can't we just be paid for our work, you know?
Right, well, right. Yes and no. The thing about it is that I still don't think that we're ready to shuffle off into obsolescence just yet. What's happened is I think we've seen enough now that we can give a little bit more, I don't know, objective view about what's going on. I mean, we're certainly not getting caught off guard where apps are concerned, for example. I think it's a while before we're completely insignificant in what we have to offer for somebody younger coming up. And at the same time, I think somebody who's just starting out at webcomics now is going to have a whole lot more at their fingertips that even though what we are saying maybe doesn't have an exact resonance with them, it's going to apply to some of the other things that they're dealing with. Does that make any sense?
Well, I'm not saying I wasn't implying that we are becoming obsolete. I'm just saying that the concept of doing things because it's the way it's always been done in webcomics are starting to not apply anymore.
That's true.
I think maybe that's what I was getting at when I said, too, about trying new things, is that there's sort of a second wave, and Scott hit it a year ago, and I hit it 6 months ago, of, like, just being willing to try new things or being aware that it's time to maybe strike out slightly different paths, you know?
But like, the idea of, like, there was a time, I mean, as like, three or four months ago, where I think we would have told people, as far as a posting schedule, that you need to really make sure that you get stuff up as often as possible and as consistently as possible. But we would never say to somebody, why don't you consider a season?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that's what about what you're starting your new strip in January or for 2011. Why don't you say it's starting in March and it ends in September? And then it starts again in March, ends in December, then starts again in February, and you know what I mean? Like, you have a break.
Well, because as a matter of fact, it just so happens that the perfect example of that was last night I was going through my RSS feeds, and I realized that the variants still haven't updated for their second season. And I thought to myself, man, that was really good first season. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for them to come back. I didn't remove them from my RSS feed. And as soon as they start up with the first episode of the next season, I'm going to know about it. So I'm going to be right there ready to go. You know what I'm saying? So there's for every RSS feed, there's also Twitter notifications and Facebook fan pages and all this other stuff. There's a whole lot more at your fingertips that you can use to retain that reader that you could do a seasonal aspect or something that Chris we talked about with last week, that he's saying, well, maybe I'm not going to do Star Slip, you know, for the rest of my career. There's going to be something else. And we talked about this whole idea of the artist as the center point, not necessarily the title.
Right. Yeah. Right. Hey, fellas, on a totally other note, I just looked at the clock and I'm running late, so I've got to scoot. So
no, it's good. It was a good show.
You guys keep going. No, I don't mean to cut you off. You can keep going. I've got to scoot.
But we've been going 56 minutes. It's good.
Oh, yeah, good. We're ready. All right. Stop, period.
We're done.
Well, this was fun. I'm sorry that I'm the one to end it, but
anyway, so this is Webcomics Weekly, and I guess we should start the show because we haven't officially yet. I'm Scott Kurt.
I'm Brad Geiger.
I'm Chris Straub.
And I'm Dave Kellett.
And goodbye.
All right. Thank you, guys. This was fun.
Yeah.
I'm glad we found a time slot to do it. And I will talk to you guys later.